Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We just expect to do fine, balanced journalism.
Fox News Chairman Roger Ailes announcing the creation of the network in 1996. Today, it's hard to know where to begin in talking about developments at the Fox News Channel. The $20 million settlement yesterday with former anchor Gretchen Carlson and her lawsuit claiming sexual harassment by Ailes. He got $40 million, by the way, to leave the network after the charge. Or maybe we start by asking why Fox anchor Greta Van Susteren resigned just after the settlement was announced, related or a coincidence. Or we could begin with our guest, New York Magazine reporter Gabriel Sherman, who has become part of the story after relentlessly reporting on Ailes, including his book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, and this week's cover story, Fox and Prey, The Revenge of Roger's Angels. Ailes is going after him. Think Peter Thiel, with his chip on his shoulder, bringing down Gawker. Think Donald Trump, who Ailes now advises, saying libel laws should be changed to make it easier to sue journalists. By the way, happy anniversary, Fox. The news channel turns 20 years old next month, an age when adolescent turmoil is usually subsiding, not in this case.
We'd like to be premier journalists. We'd like to restore objectivity where we find it lacking.
Once again, Ailes from 1996. So joining me now is Gabriel Sherman, New York Magazine correspondent. Gabe, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And let's start with the settlement, $20 million to former anchor Gretchen Carlson, and an apology, right?
Yeah, it was really a stunning turn of events, and I don't think Gretchen Carlson and her legal team could have imagined that when they filed their lawsuit on July 6th, that within 15 days, Roger Ailes would be out of Fox News, the network, as you pointed out, that he built in his image from 1996 onwards, and she would receive $20 million and really a strongly worded apology from Rupert Murdoch's parent company. So it's been a big week for Gretchen Carlson.
Does an apology mean acknowledgement of wrongdoing, a statement by the company that Roger Ailes sexually harassed her, per se?
That is a great question, Brian. I mean, I think that's really a question for a lawyer, and as a reporter, I'm not a lawyer, but in terms of legally what that means that they are admitting to, I can't answer that. But in terms of the just perception and the narrative of this scandal, clearly it is an admission that the company found this behavior inappropriate. And it also, it's an admission of what my reporting and other reporting has shown, that Gretchen Carlson had secretly tape-recorded Roger Ailes and had gotten incontrovertible evidence and proof of the sexually inappropriate comments. So the apology, I think, is as strong as we're going to get of the company admitting that this really happened.
And did I see there were settlements with two other women as well?
There was. As I reported last week, the company was negotiating with Gretchen Carlson and two other unnamed employees who were covered under the statute, 3-year statute of limitations that honors legal claims for sexual harassment in the state of New York. So those cases are being settled. That's not to say that there won't be others. And it's even possible that women who have experienced harassment outside of the statute of limitations could come forward and the company could settle those cases just to make this public relations nightmare go away.
But the other two were not named?
No, they were not named. As a condition of these settlements, you know, both parties signed non-disclosure agreements, which means that the company is going to hope that they won't be named because, again, this is all about trying to move on from this public scandal.
From what I've read, Megyn Kelly has also accused Ailes of sexual harassment. What's the status of that accusation?
So the status of that accusation is really a question that's wrapped up in Megyn Kelly's future, because her contract is going to be expiring at Fox News, and she's entering a very high-profile negotiation both with Fox News and other networks. So, you know, really this comes down to Megyn Kelly's decision. Does she want to stay at Fox now that Roger Ailes is no longer running the network? You know, we should point out that the harassment she alleged took place in 2006. So clearly, you know, going back 10 years is outside of any legal claim that she would have But I think, you know, she needs to decide, does this culture of Fox, will it change enough that she wants to continue her career there?
Without getting too graphic, what is it now apparent that Roger Ailes did?
Wow. That is a great question. And again, it's a tough question without getting too detailed because, you know, as a reporter who's covered Ailes for 5 years now, I wrote a biography of him. I mean, even I was shocked at what some of the women were alleging. I mean, to me, the real shocking part of this scandal is not necessarily the sexual harassment and abuse, which is shocking in its own right. It's really the psychological abuse that these women have said he inflicted upon them. And there's one woman I wrote about named Lori Loon, who was a longtime Fox News employee. She had known Roger Ailes going back to the 1988 Bush campaign. And they had a 20-year abusive and dysfunctional, psychologically abusive relationship. And the kind of control and humiliation that he needed to exert over these women, according to their accounts, really what to me was the shocking part of the scandal. It reflected a man who, you know, had some sort of desire or expressed desire to humiliate women and dominate them in the workplace. I mean, all this this alleged harassment took place during job interviews, and he made it, according to their accounts, explicit that if they wanted jobs on his TV networks or other interview shows, they needed to do sexual favors for him and his friends. And it was this explicit quid pro quo that I found, you know, to be disturbing. And that to me was really, I think, what people should look at. Not necessarily, I mean, the sex itself, the behavior was a lot, you know, really inappropriate, but it was also just how this was almost something that he felt compelled to do.
How specific did Megyn Kelly get about anything?
Well, she is not. We should point out that she has not commented publicly. But she did testify, according to my reporting and others, to the law firm Paul Weiss that was hired by the parent company 21st Century Fox to investigate these claims. And she, well, from what I understand, she told them that Roger Ailes made a series of inappropriate sexual comments and wanted her to look, turn around, and twirl her figure in his office, which is something he's done with many women. And also he inappropriately hugged her in his office in a way that made her incredibly uncomfortable. And it was part of a pattern of harassment, you know, verbal harassment and sort of testing her verbally that advanced to this unwanted hug in his office. That is what she made her claims about.
My guest is New York Magazine reporter Gabriel Sherman, also the author of the book about Roger Ailes, The Loudest Voice in the Room, as we talk about the dramatic developments involving Ailes and the Fox News Channel in the last day. And listeners, if you have any questions or anything you want to say, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll talk about how Gabe himself has become a part of the story he was reported on in the New York Times today. For example, with respect to Ailes' reaction to all of this, and we'll get into Greta Van Susteren and her sudden resignation as a Fox News host after the settlement with the former anchor Gretchen Carlson was announced yesterday. So all of that to come. And your calls, if you have any, 212-433-WNYC. One odd moment you mentioned in your article this week is from July 19th, after Megyn Kelly had come forward, when Ailes' lawyer, Susan Estrich, tried to send Ailes' denial to the Drudge Report, but mistakenly sent a draft of Ailes' severance deal. What did that mistake reveal?
Well, to me, it revealed a man who had completely lost control of his own story. You know, as I write in my biography, the thing that Ailes, one of the things he prizes most is controlling narratives. And he did it on behalf of Republican politicians starting way back in 1968 with Richard Nixon and reintroducing and packaging him for television. And Roger Ailes, throughout his career, did it with his own story. And he was able to shield and hide this abusive behavior and harassment from the press. But what it showed is on July 19th, 2 days before his ouster, he had completely lost control of the story. His legal team was in chaos. and, you know, inadvertently sending a sensitive document like a severance agreement to the Drudge Report, which is about as public of a forum as you can have, to me just showed the chaos that they were dealing with as they tried to contain the scandal.
Okay, why did Fox News host Greta Van Susteren resign yesterday?
That is a great question. We're learning more by the day. But from my reporting yesterday, what I've learned is there's sort of two things happened in parallel. One thing is that after Roger Ailes was ousted from the company, Greta Van Susteren sort of broached the idea of renegotiating her contract because, you know, she wanted to really solidify her future at Fox in the post-Ailes era. She had been unhappy at Fox. And when the network made it clear that they were not going to entertain any kind of contract talks, she exercised what is called a key man clause in her contract that allowed her to leave Fox News in the event that Roger Ailes was not the head of the network. And what she has said publicly and what others have told me is that she really wasn't happy at Fox. I do know that she was unaware of the sexual harassment allegations against Ailes. And if you notice, during after the Gretchen Carlson had filed her lawsuit, Greta Van Susteren was one of the high-profile Fox personalities who spoke out in defense of Roger Ailes. And people close to Greta have told me that in the wake of that, she didn't know what Ailes had really been doing, and she was dismayed and troubled by the scope of the allegations after the fact. And so I think she was just unhappy at this messy situation that had developed at Fox and decided now she had a window in her contract that can kind of get her out gracefully.
By the way, if I have my numbers right, Gretchen Carlson got paid $20 million to settle this suit. Roger Ailes got paid $40 million by Fox to leave over this suit and, I guess, related allegations. Are those numbers right?
Those are right. You know, both that we should point out, both Ailes and 21st Century Fox, Murdoch's parent company, haven't commented publicly on the numbers. But yes, my reporting from inside the story shows that those numbers are right. And the other thing we should point out, Brian, is that there was a lot of speculation that Murdoch was going to make Roger Ailes pay for a portion of Gretchen Carlson's settlement. And what it turns out is that Ailes' legal team was able to negotiate that Murdoch's parent company will be paying, Fox will be paying for the entirety of Gretchen's $20 million settlement. So really, Roger Ailes has walked away from this scandal, having to not dip into any of his own pockets.
Why $40 million to him? One could argue that if these allegations have been substantiated, one could just be fired for cause.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I've asked that question repeatedly of people at Fox, and this is what I've been told. So the payment, the severance package was split into two portions. The first portion, the $20 million, was what he was owed as his bonus for 2015 that was paid out in July of this year. So that first $20 million was money that contractually he had already earned. The second $20 million, which will be the basically the remaining year on his contract, you're right, they could have fired him for cause, but his contract was so ironclad that Ailes could have hired, and we know he's a very litigious man, could have hired lawyers to sue 21st Century Fox. And then not only would Murdoch be negotiating these sexual harassment settlements, he conceivably would be embroiled in really messy litigation with Roger Ailes. So my understanding is that the calculus was that, yes, they're going to take a public relations hit by paying him the $40 million, but that was just the cleanest way to get him out the door and just try to move on from this.
Jocelyn in Livingston, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Gabriel Sherman. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi. Good morning. My comment is, what about the wife of Ailes? There's no comment from her with all these women coming forward about, you know, this allegations of sexual, you know, misconduct. So I'm just thinking like it's a little... you know, they're supposed to be on the Republican Party, standing up for traditional values and all that. So that was just a little glaring for me.
Jocelyn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot in that question, starting with, I don't know Ailes' family situation. I guess the premise of the question is that he's married and married to a woman, correct?
Yes. So Roger Ailes is married to his third wife, Elizabeth Ailes. She's a former television producer. They met when Roger Ailes was the president of CNBC, the financial network, in the early to mid-1990s. They married in 1998, and they had Ailes' first child, a son, in the year 2000. So what's really interesting about this story is that Ailes' wife, Elizabeth, was in the war room. She was in all of those meetings during the days leading up to his ouster from Fox. She was by his side loyally. She walked out of the building with him. There's a very famous picture, a now famous picture of them leaving Fox for the last day, getting into the car. That was in the New York Times today. But subsequently, since he left Fox, I have heard that they have really fallen, their marriage has fallen on hard times. I reported in my New York Magazine cover story that in a private meeting, Rudy Giuliani, who is a close friend and an advisor of Roger Ailes, a law partner of Giuliani's, Mark Mukasey is one of Ailes' lawyers. In a private meeting, Rudy told Rupert Murdoch that, quote, this marriage won't last. And that's an important point to make because Rudy Giuliani officiated at Roger Ailes and Elizabeth Ailes' wedding. So I've heard, again, from four people close to the family that their marriage is very strained, not surprisingly, because it's, you know, be difficult for anyone to go through the situation. So I think that helps explain your listeners' answer about why we've not seen a public comment from Roger Ailes' wife.
You said one of Ailes' lawyers is Mark Mukasey. That's not the former George W. Bush attorney general. That's Michael Mukasey, right?
Yes, it's his son. It's Michael Mukasey's son. He's a law partner at Greenberg Traurig, a very high-profile, powerful corporate law firm.
And also Susan Estrich. I thought she was like a liberal feminist attorney once upon a time.
It's, you know, this cast of characters, you almost couldn't make it up. It's so fascinating. You know, Susan Estrich was famously Michael Dukakis' campaign manager in 1988 when Roger Ailes was George H.W. Bush's chief media strategist, and Roger Ailes was the architect of Michael Dukakis' political destruction. You know, the famous ad of Dukakis riding in the tank that he never recovered from. You know, that was Roger Ailes' creation. And so, you know, Ailes had gone up against Estrich, but they became friends after the campaign, and Roger Ailes brought her to Fox to be a commentator and was very loyal to her, kept her on the payroll even when she wasn't on TV. She wasn't on TV very often. And this just shows how Ailes surrounds himself with people that are very loyal to him. And Susan Estrich has, you know, seemingly been willing to compromise her feminist and her political values to defend Roger Ailes.
Ari in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ari.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm not surprised by any of these allegations because this has been a theme with the Christian right in this country where they say one thing and they do another. We always see these Republican congressmen who are, you know, doing some prostitution or something or some kind of debauchery while they condemn the rest of the country as sort of morally bankrupt. And I also have to say that I don't feel that bad for Gretchen Carlson or Andrea Santaros or the other women who've come out about this, because they've spent years making money pushing these terrible ideas on TV, and now when it happens to them, as always with conservatives, now they realize, oh yeah, sexual harassment is a problem, because it happened to me, so Roger Ailes is terrible. Meanwhile, it happens to so many other women, they deny it, they pretend, you know, they try to downplay it, so I'm a little tired of it, you know. They should come out. Gretchen Carlson also owes us an apology, not just Fox to her, she owes it to us.
Well, Gabe, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a lot of sort of things going on in that question. I'll try to take a few of them. I agree. You know, one of the great sort of hypocrisies and contradictions at the heart of Fox News it was the media message machine for the party that purported to be for family values. You know, Roger Ailes built Fox News off of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. I mean, that to me is one of the grand ironies of this whole thing, that in 1998, Fox News' ratings skyrocketed because Ailes programmed the impeachment, the Whitewater and Ken Starr investigation 24/7. And so it turns out that while Ailes was going after Bill Clinton for inappropriate behavior, he himself was engaged in the same thing. I mean, we saw that with members of Congress, Newt Gingrich, and others, Bob Livingston. So I think this is just part of a long history of the Republican Party having this blind spot of you know, sort of professing public morality, but in private acting contrary to what they say. You know, in terms of Gretchen and Andrea Tantaros, and, you know, it's not my job as a reporter to, you know, that's not how I see my job, to sort of, you know, paint them as, you know, heroes or villains. I mean, I think my job was to tell the story. And, you know, I think obviously there's a lot of debate about why this behavior went along. But I will say that no matter what you think of Gretchen Carlson or Andrea Tantaros, no one should be, you know, that's why we're a country of laws. No one should have to be subjected to this behavior to have a job that they are in, that they want. You know, we should be free in this country to pursue careers we want and be ambitious, and not, it shouldn't be, you know, a condition of employment that, oh, well, you know, you wanted to work in the TV industry, so you knew what you were getting into. I just don't buy that. And that's why I think, you know, we have very, you know, we should have very strong laws that make this behavior unacceptable in the workplace.
You mentioned the irony of Ailes and Fox News Channel rising on the impeachment of Bill Clinton in the late 90s. It's really a double irony, because Ken Starr, the special prosecutor against Clinton, rose to prominence on the sexual misconduct case against the president, and he went on to become a university president, as you know, and he recently lost that job over being too weak on sexual harassment on campus. And now we have Ailes.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we are all of these stories, again, have a level of irony to them. And, you know, really, I think what Ailes sort of understood and profited off of is that at its core, you know, Fox News was a political machine. And he knew that there was a slice of America that wanted a reason to hate Democrats, and appealing to issues of class, race and culture, and using them as wedge issues was a way to build an audience. So, you know, going after Clinton on the sexual morality issue was really just a political tactic that Ailes exploited, and it didn't matter that he was doing the same, you know, similar things in private.
Let me step back from that last caller's question in one other way. Do you see the sexual harassment case as relevant or irrelevant to the conservative powerhouse that Fox News Channel has become, as you were just describing? We have a lot of commenters who want to tie the two. Would it just be a liberal cartoon to say, of course, Fox, with its old sexist values, would be a place where this culture of harassment was allowed to go on for a long time? Or is this just about the individuals involved, and it could just as easily be happening at a liberal or neutral news organization? Probably a lot of women would think that, too.
That is a great question. So I think I'll start by answering it by saying it's not unique to Fox, unfortunately. You know, sexual harassment in television and the entertainment business, we've heard a lot of stories about Hollywood, of course. You know, sexual harassment is pervasive across, unfortunately, American workplaces. We've seen landmark cases filed by female Wall Street executives. So no, this is not, you know, specific to Fox News. What is specific to Fox News, though, and I show this in my article, is the way Ailes built a culture that allowed this behavior to go unreported for two decades. And the way he did that was building a culture of fear. He used surveillance, smear campaigns, intimidation to keep any employee that might report this publicly in line. And that, to me, is what's unique to Fox. Not the fact that sexual harassment occurred, because that goes on, you know, many places. But it was a system that he built that allowed it to go on, that is unique. And that's what I found troubling.
We're talking with Gabriel Sherman from New York Magazine, who's been covering Roger Ailes. He has this week's cover story, Fox and Prey, The Revenge of Roger's Angels. He wrote a professional biography of Roger Ailes, The Loudest Voice in the Room, that book. And if you have not yet heard the development in the last day, actually there are a number of them, $20 million settlement with former Fox anchor Gretchen Carlson, who sued the network for alleged harassment, sexual harassment by Ailes. Also, the immediate resignation thereafter of Fox News host Gretchen Van Susteren. And Alicia in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Alicia.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, I just wanted to comment that, you know, what frustrates me most as a woman, and I've been in the workplace now for probably 13, 14 years, And I've experienced harassment in all kinds of different environments, in restaurants where I've worked, in cafes, in offices. I also worked in a hotel, and I experienced some really horrific harassment there. And, you know, I was happy and proud when I saw Gretchen Carlson come forward, but and I'm glad she won. Obviously, that's a bit of a vindication, but it's the enablers. It's not just Roger Ailes, and it's not just the culture of fear that he's created. This is a problem in a lot of workplaces, not just TV. And it's the people around the harassers who say, well, you need to get a tougher skin, or you need to learn to deal with it yourself, or who excuse their behavior, or in the case of Roger Ailes, apparently reward his behavior. So that's a frustration for me.
Absolutely, Alicia. I'm sure for many people. And so a question out of that, Gabe, is there more to be revealed about who knew what and when? Maybe there were, I don't know how many Fox employees who knew what Ailes was up to, who hushed it up, and now need to be outed in the name of justice, or flip side, were intimidated by, you know, how powerful Ailes was and some of the other people who were in power who maybe knew what was going on, and people who wanted to reveal it didn't feel safe revealing it. Anything like that?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a great question, and I've focused a lot of my reporting on this because I agree that people around Ailes that look the other way or explicitly allowed this behavior to go on is a big part of the story. I focused my reporting on Bill Shine, who was promoted, shockingly, after Ailes was ousted to be the co-president of Fox News. He was his longtime deputy, and he played a role in helping Ailes move the woman Lori Loon around. He signed her sexual harassment settlement. His signature was on it. He didn't apparently ask questions. The other person I focused a lot of my reporting on is the Fox News general counsel, the lawyer for the network, who signed these agreements. And she clearly knew what was going on. And in fact, I interviewed a woman who told me that she confided in Diane Brandy, the general counsel. And Diane Brandy, to my knowledge, you know, didn't really do much about this. And in fact, I've reported that Diane Brandy, the general counsel, hired a private investigator to help get the phone records of journalists, private phone records, which, in my understanding, the law is not allowed. And so she was part of this culture of suppressing and intimidating people that may come forward, both inside the company and outside the company. So again, I agree with your listener's question. You're really the circle of enablers around Ailes should be getting a lot of attention.
Why isn't this a bigger scandal for Trump, especially now? The candidate who's trying to prove to women that he's not a raving sexist has taken on America's now best-known fired for sexual harassment guy to help him do debate prep against the first woman nominee. Why isn't Ailes too tainted for Trump as a presidential candidate? What if he hired Bill Cosby?
Well, you know, Trump has been immune to all laws of, you know, kind of political gravity. So that's, you know, I think, you know, any other candidate, this would be game over. You know, we should point out that Dick Morris had to resign in 1996 when a consensual sex scandal broke. You know, this wasn't harassment. It was consensual with Dick Morris. So
aide to Bill Clinton in the White House.
Yeah. Who was an aide to Bill, a top advisor to Bill Clinton's reelection campaign. So I agree, it's a big story. Now, we should point out Ailes has denied all the allegations, and we should also point out that Trump officially is not saying he's a paid advisor or even an official advisor. You know, this morning Kellyanne Conway, who's one of the new co-leaders of the campaign, played down any idea that Ailes is playing a formal role. So I think what Trump is trying to do, Brian, is to kind of have it both ways, you know, sort of keep Ailes at a distance, saying that he's not really a part of the campaign, while I know that my reporting indicates they speak all the time. Roger Ailes is in the debate prep sessions, so he's trying to get Roger Ailes' political advice without having to take ownership over Ailes' past behavior. And I agree, it should be a bigger story because, you know, the circle of advisors a president or a candidate surrounds themselves with gives us an indication of the type of values that they have.
So you are now part of this story. The New York Times today has you in it. It says, last week, Ailes' lawyers publicly went after Gabriel Sherman, who has reported on Mr. Ailes and his downfall extensively for New York Magazine, in deeply personal ways in the run-up to the publication of Mr. Sherman's latest article on Mr. Ailes. That's the one out now. In an interview with the Daily Beast last week, one of Mr. Ailes' lawyers, Mark Mukasey, called Mr. Sherman a virus, and Susan Estrich, another of his lawyers, called him the real enemy of women. So what does this all look like to you on the receiving end?
Well, you know, listen, Brian, it's not fun, but I don't take it personally. I mean, really, I'm just focused on doing, you know, my job, which is, you know, reporting accurately and fairly about all of my subjects, which include Roger Ailes. And, you know, I just look at this as part of a pattern of going back, you know, to the beginning of Ailes' career. As I mentioned earlier, you know, one of the things he prizes most is control. And throughout the reporting of my book and my New York Magazine articles, he did things to attempt to control the narrative and my reporting, and, you know, things that, you know, that I didn't consent to, you know, making deals or trying to curtail my reporting. So, you know, these comments, which I don't take personally. I just think this is more indication he's revealing, you know, the lengths that he goes to try to control the way the public sees him. And I'll just, you know, continue to do my work and just focus on, you know, being professional.
Did I read that NBC News has also just hired you in addition to New York Magazine?
So I'm going to be a politics and media contributor to NBC News. That's correct. I'm excited about it.
I guess they're not afraid of your Ailes tainted reputation.
Well, you know, it's the way these TV deals work. It was this week just happened to be my first official week, but it's been you know, in the works long before Ailes started blustering about this most recent article. But yes, I'm very happy that I'll have this new outlet to report with.
So does that mean people are going to be seeing you on MSNBC a lot?
Yes, both across the platforms. I've you know, I've been a longtime guest on MSNBC, and I've done interviews on the Today Show. So this will, you know, just formalize you know, TV appearances that I've had a lot of pleasure to do in the past.
Given what just happened to Gawker, could Ailes bring down New York Magazine with a lawsuit focused on your reporting?
Well, you know, anytime a very wealthy, litigious subject hires a lawyer, you know, you want to take it seriously. But, you know, at New York Magazine, we're focused on, you know, doing our work, doing it professionally. And we have not so far received any specific complaints about my reporting from Roger Ailes or his legal team. You know, the letter we received had no specifics in it. So until they make any sort of specific complaints about the reporting, we'll respond to it at that point. But until then, we're continuing to do the journalism that we've always done, which is fair, and we get it right, and we take it very seriously.
Do you see a link between Ailes' situation and Trump talking about wanting it to be easier to sue journalists in the United States?
Well, you know, I just want to, you know, take this out of my situation because, again, you know, we should just be clear. Roger Ailes has not filed any litigation. We've gotten a very vague letter from one of his lawyers. But that said, I will speak more broadly to Ailes' pattern of dealing with the press, and this includes all journalists, not just me, and Trump. I do think it's very troubling that, you know, Trump has talked about weakening libel law, and Ailes, as we know, has gone to great lengths to intimidate journalists and try to suppress good reporting about a very powerful institution, Fox News. So I am troubled by that, and I was troubled by it when I was working on my book. But, you know, from my perspective, the lengths that Ailes went to try to stop me from reporting, and as CNN Brian Stelter noted, he commissioned a 400-page research dossier about me. He had private investigators following me. He had a secret brain room, a surveillance operation that set up websites to smear my reputation on the internet. So, you know, all of these things, I just saw them as him revealing himself as someone who doesn't really seem to believe in the free press and tries to suppress reporting. And so that's the way I took it. But I find that troubling. And, you know, whatever you think of Roger Ailes or Donald Trump, I think we should all agree that the First Amendment, whatever your politics, is the bedrock of our democracy.
Last thing on what Fox News Channel is going to look like to viewers going forward. There's a quote in your article: after the election, there will be a bloodbath at Fox. Bill O'Reilly has been talking about retirement. Megan could go to another network. Hannity will go to Trump TV. Ha. Huh. Do you think if Trump loses, there'll be a Trump TV, and will Roger Ailes run it?
Well, two things. I think, yes, I think it's very serious. These are active talks and negotiations about Trump considering, you know, to build a media business out of this audience he's built if he doesn't win. In terms of Ailes' involvement, you know, he has signed a non-compete clause as a condition of receiving that $40 million that you were talking about earlier, which my understanding is it goes through 2017, potentially into 2018. So he would not be able to have official involvement in Trump TV until that time. But, you know, Ailes is, you know, his longevity has surprised a lot of people. And he's the kind of guy, I think, if he sees a chance for another act, is going to, you know, fight as hard as he can to get one.
And I guess he could be an informal advisor to a Trump TV.
And
then in 2 years, sign a big signing bonus that's in effect retro pay.
Of course, yeah. And Roger Ailes has made, you know, probably around $200 million in his career so far. So it's not like he needs the money on a day-to-day basis. He's doing just fine.
Gabriel Sherman, New York Magazine correspondent, now NBC correspondent as well, as we've learned in the last day, author of the book about Roger Ailes, The Loudest Voice in the Room, and this week's cover story in New York Magazine, Fox and Prey, The Revenge of Roger's Angels. Gabriel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come. Stay with us.